Well, hopefully we can talk to them pretty soon, that's coming up. Do you talk to your computers? But what's coming on now is through feelings. Now that we're being taught and have begun to embrace the feeling means of communication, it is so much faster than thought, because it cuts out. With thought you think about something, then you plan how to do it, then you examine it. In short, there are many steps with thought. Whereas with feeling. Feeling is entirely goal-oriented, it cuts out all of the steps. You feel the feeling, as I said before, of increased mental capacity. And you focus on those feelings and feel them as much as you can for a while, and then you have it. It cuts out all the steps. That's wonderful. It's like you do on your computers. You have. Oh, in the old days you had a small capacity computer, it filled the room. Now you have a big capacity computer, and you can carry it under your arm. This was from 2001? Ah yes, like this one. Laughs, when I started my company, the amount of memory in this thing was. It wasn't even a dream, it wasn't even conceivable. Next headline, hyperspace, moving through time and sound. What I'd like now is, I'd like you to speak to our scientists or have your scientists speak to our scientists a little bit. I'd like it to be a little beyond what I can understand. In other words, I don't want you to filter it to what you think I can understand. I'd like it to be for the general public, but to have some jewels in here for trained scientists. Very well. If I seem to speak differently, I will be translating for the scientist, the senior scientist, as you might call him. But it might amuse you to know that the senior scientist is younger than the so-called junior. But this is because he was born with certain abilities so that he could receive a vast amount of waning quicker than the other scientist. He's pretty young. He still is young enough to play a little bit with playmate. Well, the other one was 600 years old. How old is this one? He's very young. He's about 120. Oh, how wonderful. I would like to speak to him sometime. However you guys work it out, that's okay. Let's do the science now, because I'm getting that connected. Alright. First, talk about hyperspace. To us, it's a concept in science fiction. That's simply a way of measuring space as it relates to time, it has no actual meaning. It is a way of saying, this compaction of tones, meaning sounds, references this much time. As you expand and collapse time in the same moment, you are then able to merge time with sound. It is the merging of time with sound that creates the capacity to move at a very high velocity from one point to another without the need to interact with the space around it. You don't move through space, that's why there is no danger of striking anything or anything striking you. You move through time and sound. If you put your energy toward that, as you've begun to do with some navigational equipment, you will discover that that is the means to travel great distances in very brief moments. You talk about getting to hyperspace in great magnetic streams of energy. Could we visualize that as similar to jet streams on Earth? No, because magnetism. It's helpful to understand magnetism, because you're talking about something you can readily identify, that it has poles, that it pushes or it pulls. In a concentrated stream of magnetic energy, we travel in sound. So you want to start doing more work now with sound and magnetics. You can set up a magnetic field and you can pulse. Remember, a lot of sound has to do with pulse. Any tone you wish to try, louder, quieter, it doesn't matter. Quicker pulse, slower pulse. You can also use condensed sound. Apostrophe believe you've discovered how to do that. You don't exactly have much of a use for it, except in your military, but you can use condensed sound and you can even pulse that. But do all of this in the magnetic field. For starters, put something in that field that you won't miss. I'm not talking about a living being, but something. For instance, well, this has been done before, perhaps a ping pong ball. Just let it be there, not perhaps right in the field itself, but so close to the field that it doesn't interrupt it but it is there. At same point, The ping pong ball will become either less visible or more visible, or it will begin to move on its own without any impact of anything physical. Or it might simply become translucent or partially transparent. Regardless of what it does, notice and document what's going on, not only at the moment that you are seeing something, an anomaly with the ping pong ball, but what preceded that moment, no matter what it was, even if the experiment wasn't happening in that precise moment. Whatever preceded it in the immediate area of the cubicle where this might go on. Say, the actual experiment is in a 5x5 cubicle and you are separated by perhaps a heavy glass and a little lead around that, as a frame. Make sure that you keep track of everything that is happening in the room, plus the cubicle, for at least 5 minutes before and 5 minutes after the moment of the noted anomaly or anomalies. You might find, to your surprise, that it has equally to do with the feelings of the people in the room, not the thoughts about the feelings, but the actual physical feelings in your bodies, and that the more your feelings are in harmony together, especially if it's a harmonious feeling, the more likely you are to have success. Wonderful, thank you. Next headline, another means of travel. In the original book it says that stars radiate energy sufficient to power ships at a great distance. Can you discuss that? That is another means of travel. If you are traveling, perhaps, a short distance and you don't have to move across galaxies, then you might simply want to move quickly but through space, let's say. If you want to move quickly but through space, you focus your navigational beam on a star, any star, roughly in the direction you're moving. From time to time, your actual point of focus might change, but you don't simply release your focus on one star and then focus on another. You always connect with another beam, but from the same point, meaning draws. This is a highly magnified example, but you might have a beam to a star, and then, say, you are getting ready to change your direction. You would send out another beam to another star before. First, then second, draws. You would connect with the second one before you released the first one. What happens when you do that is that you don't actually draw the energy from the star to you, rather you are drawn by the energy. So what you are doing is that you are using the gravitational pull of the star itself when you're wavering through space, and you become like the iron filing attracted to the magnet. You know from your experiments in your own solar system what a powerful pull your sun has. It is the same with suns all over. So all you need to really do is make a strong connection navigationally with a concentrated sound field, and then you are simply pulled. You can't make a constant connection with it, otherwise, you'd be pulled too fast, go out of control and might strike something. You have to make a pulsed connection so that the connection, it's like. You have switches like that now. The connection is opening and closing, at the rate that allows you to waver at the exact speed you wish to travel, without going too fast and otherwise becoming unmanageable. Plutonium in our atmosphere. In the book it says that there's a great diversity of climate on the Earth because of modifications in our solar system. You talk about intermittently radioactive clouds that could damage our neurons and that are also highly explosive, which are caused by nuclear explosions that attract gases from space. So there are two issues here: what were the modifications in our solar system, and what can we do about that which we've attracted? The modifications, of course, have to do with atmospheric testing of nuclear devices. Even though the plutonium is consumed, it is not entirely consumed. There are portions of it that remain, and as scientists know, plutonium, when exposed to the air, just exposed to the air on its own, tends to be explosive because of its instability. Nevertheless, the actual energy signature of the plutonium has remained in your atmosphere, and as long as it is up high enough in the atmosphere, it does not pose a threat of exploding. Your scientists in the early days were afraid of setting off a nuclear chain reaction simply by having an explosion in the atmosphere, and there was concern about that, even though not many scientists took it seriously. What that threat represents is a minuscule threat, but it's not minuscule in the sense that it might never happen. Rather, there is always an ongoing threat that it might happen. Therefore, I believe that is why, ultimately, such testing in recent years, with a few exceptions, has largely been put underground. Not that the underground is helped by that, but that's another question. So that is the problem. Now, what was the second question? What can we do about it? Resolving the plutonium signature with material mastery. You have to recognize that it cannot be changed by your current technology. The plutonium signature. I believe that some of you understand what I mean, that you can tell it was there. It's not just that it's leaving a portion of itself, but it leaves a definite signature. The plutonium signature is in the upper atmosphere. I believe it can only be transformed at this time, and probably, barring visitation from extraterrestrials on a benevolent level that may or may not occur in the next 50 years, I do not think that you, on your own, will develop technology in the next 50 years to do anything about this. So because the signature has the hazard of becoming combined with extraterrestrial elements, because of the holes in parts of your atmosphere and openings mostly generated by the breakdown of your atmosphere but also partly generated by occasional experiments involving the radiation of various waves through the atmosphere for various testing, which also creates a temporary hole. No, I feel that scientifically you can't really do much about this, but spiritually there are those who are working to resolve this. But it can only be resolved by using the natural energy of Mother Earth, not the energy you find on her surface now, but her natural energy, her natural compatible energy. This can be taught to spiritual teachers, it can also be taught to students who are learning things about material mastery. But do not think your technology can do anything about it now. It represents a danger, however, because should the combination of, say, for example, gamma rays, strike the plutonium signature, it is possible to generate a flashover. The flashover would not, in its own tight, harm people or beings on the Earth, but it could destroy large portions of the atmosphere, large, meaning big enough to fly a plane through. And that would be very hazardous. Should flashover occur, you would have to move your cultures underground. So that's why the work that Robert and a few others are doing to transform pollution and radiation utilizing the natural energy of Mother Earth, focused through other aspects that they are being trained to do, is vitally important. You as scientists might not actually gravitate to this work and do not feel that you need to. It may not be that your training supports this. For some of you who wish to leave, you will have to expand a bit in your idea of the medals for change. But if you can make that expansion, you can learn, and your scientific knowledge would go a long way toward interfacing with other members of the community and, perhaps more importantly, those who are setting the computer programs for the future, so that computer programs will not be interfered with by potential radiations and flashover. Should it occur, flashover will create a pulse, and the pulse will act not unlike the pulse that is used as an electronic pulse to minimize the value of anything electronic, used in some military applications. It is not unlike that pulse and could essentially destroy valuable and important computer programs that are in place now, even given the type of shielding they have. For the shielding to actually work, it will have to be about a mile down below Earth. To have computer programs interfered with or destroyed, especially as you are coming more into your time of computer usage in all ways on the planet, and perhaps more to the point, to have that computer usage interfacing on a personal level with each individual internally as well as externally. Such breakdown in computer functionality could literally decimate the population. Therefore, even though the potential for this is small, it has been the same potential from the very beginning, suggested as a risk by those early scientists who said, what if? So no, as the scientific community, that something is being done about this in the spiritual community, some of which you'll know about in your lifetimes, others of you may not know about it. But if you want to know more about it, then you can inquire along the lines of those who are working to support a personal transformation of former portions of Mother Earth's body into becoming natural once again, by refocusing on felt levels meaning feelings, physical, and sound levels, meaning unheard sound. It might be possible to pick it up using ultrasonic detectors, and also associated with the condensed energy of specific polarities associated with the center of the Earth along the lines of the magnetic pole. This kind of energy, where one might find Mother Earth's natural energy or near there, is the focal point from which the transformation of these formerly nuclear signatures, to, say, in the best light, in the future, are transformed into something where they are no longer detectable in the atmosphere. The key is to transform it and not to bring it back to Earth, because that's not possible. The only thing that is possible and the only solution is to simply remove it from your dimensional awareness. It's not going to be moved to another dimension, it will still be in your dimension, but it will not be detectable. And by not being detectable, this means that it will not be a threat. TT will not simply be invisible, it will not be traceable. Right now you can trace it by tunneling a negative collector plate, perhaps using a particle accelerator and bouncing in a small unit, by essentially sending this collecting device up through the levels of your atmosphere and then parachuting it or allowing it to come back down. I believe that some of you have done this with film and other receptive markers. Most of this work has been done on the surface of the planet, using the linear accelerators to show what has been there, leaving that photographic imprint. But some of you may be working on the program where the collection of markers you are using now to identify elements, where they are, where they came from and so on, that you are also getting on these collection devices, if they are exposed early enough within levels of your atmosphere, marks that you don't know and don't understand. Some of those have to do with these things I've been discussing. Wonderful. Next headline, human computer chips. Are we going to have personal computer connections inside us? Yes, you can't get around that. That's something that's going to happen. There will be a lot of resistance about that. Some people will fight it. But a lot of people will also embrace it, because it will have a lot of good things about it. For one thing, children will never be lost again. If they are lost, they will be able to be found quickly. And so there's that. Also, it will be very helpful medically. You may not be able to remember that you had a cold 63 years ago, but the device will know when you had it and what its impact was on your body. Of course, that's for generations getting the device now. Most likely the device will be implanted in children first, and then as people see its positive qualities, it will be utilized, implanted in everybody as a universal identifier. Initially, this will create some problems, certainty with some cultures, elements of different religions will resist it. But it is something you need to go through so that you can resolve your relationship with technology and move through masculine technology, which is forceful, into feminine technology, which is supportive and nurturing. Since you are involved in masculine technology now, you must go through it. You are beginning to be involved in feminine technology, and that will help you to get through. Initially, as, say, the device will do other things that are not considered benevolent or pleasant, because something could be triggered remotely that the person who has the device in him would not do of his own accord, therefore, there will be a lot of resistance about that. But in the long run, those circuits will be removed from devices that are installed in people once you get over that and already activated in people who have the old device. The device is basically just a tiny little computer chip that mostly interacts with something external but can support some acquisition of knowledge by interacting organically with your own body, to use your body to a degree as the organic storage, in the more advanced units, not the ones that exist now. Who is planning to put these things out? You mean which companies? No, who is instigating it? Is it the sinister secret government? No. The instigation has lots and lots of support. A lot of your crimes that are essentially unsolvable right now will be prevented by this, so there is an awful lot of governmental support, and right now it's really something that's being talked about in scientific communities. But you can see some of the early types of results by people implanting rather large, bulky versions of these things in animals. Oh, tagging them, yes. But the device that will go into humans will be much smaller. You said there was something that would be externally activated in the early devices that would be removed later on? Yes. It might be able to trigger something. For instance, if someone somewhere decides your population is too big, it might be able to trigger a situation in a woman where she couldn't give birth or in a man where he couldn't produce sperm. Even though the device is tiny, it won't move around much, but it will be connected either to your nervous system or to your brain, which is also part of your nervous system. So it won't be injected into that part of your body for obvious reasons, but it will find its way there, and it will also be, to a small degree, powered by your nervous system, which does have a small electrical charge associated with it. But much of its function will have to do with their larger electronic device that is held near it initially. After a time, it will be possible to have broadcast towers where you program what you want people to do in a given area. Perhaps people are sick, and there's not enough medicine to go around. You might be able to reduce the people's metabolic level to slow them way down, so they'd go to bed and lay down and rest. It would slow down the progress of the disease. It would also slow down the capacity that you have to do anything. So it would be all you could do to lie in bed and drag yourself to the bathroom now and then and drink a little water, but that's it. You would just lay there and the disease would slow down so much in its progress, that the temporary shortage of the drug you needed to get better, they'd be able to build it up faster. By the time they had enough, you'd be inoculated, and then the broadcast energy would be removed and your metabolism would return to normal. Clearly they couldn't do this for too long a period of time, but they might get themselves an extra 24 hours spread out over 48. This sounds a little bit controlling. This is not free will. It is not a little bit controlling, it's completely controlling. And you see this happening to us in the near future? Oh, didn't say the near future, but it is likely that you will go through it. It will have an awful lot of attractive elements associated with it. Those people will tell you that it will greatly decrease crime, and that's true. It will start out decreasing certain types of crime, and as time goes on, it will decrease even more. For one thing, a lot can be done, especially in proximity. Meaning, when it first starts out, a lot will be passable in terms of controlling violent outbursts. So that will be mighty attractive to a lot of people, and when you hear that, you might be willing to forgo certain freedoms, especially if you're in a culture where you don't have that much freedom to begin with. Now, that may not be the case in the United States, but it's certainly the case in other cultures where the people are not particularly free anyway. The idea of being free from being assaulted would be very appealing. Are being attacked, say, by people you don't used, maybe people on the other side of the border. If they have the devices in them tow, and you're afraid of those people, that they might attack you and do violence to you or your friends or your family, if there's a broadcast signal that prevents that. Whoa! That's very attractive, indeed. But what's to prevent someone from broadcasting it on one side of the border and not the other? It will be centrally located, a central authority. It won't be. Granted, there will be some failures. I'm not lying to sell it, I'm just telling you what will happen. There will be same failures in the beginning with that and what you're saying, and then a universal plan will be very quickly assembled, part of the global. If not government, at least same thing like it. Next headline, Earth came here with all her dimensions. We're told that the Earth we're on right now was brought here from Sirius. The first one was destroyed, but it occurred to me today. Have never asked if the other dimensions of the first planet are here. When they brought this planet, did they bring it with all of its dimensions? I will tell you only this. The other dimensions of the first planet are where Moulk was. So this planet from Sirius, then, when they talk about higher dimensions, this planet was brought here in all of its being. Yes. Ah, thank you. Thank you. How does the channel feel? Well, right now it's marginal that he could actually leave the house. Let's quit talking then, he needs to do his errands, and he'll be gone tomorrow. But not forgotten. I've never had the chance to say that. Laughs, well, I'm serious, next time you. Oh, you can't come here, can you? I won't be returning to Earth. Well, maybe one of your friends can bring me that translator. Laughs. Why don't you just come and get it yourself? Oh, I'd love to. Is anybody coming here now? Since. There's two things. The secret government has got this place kind of wired, and, you had the memo, don't come. Are benevolent ETs coming to this planet now on higher dimensions? On higher dimensions, yes. But not through these, 3.5. You can't say. Can we talk maybe to you a little tomorrow, and maybe to the scientist and to Playmate? We'll see, it depends on the channel's energy level. The sooner, the better, the link will be stronger sooner. But, understand that's not possible, so it's best to get as much as you can now. But I would say, if you have to let go of anything, to let go of the science questions a bit. It is more difficult for the channel when the being he's channeling is not speaking, in this case, for herself, was speaking for the scientist. That's why my voice got a bit more severe, mere lecturing or almost hectoring, because that's the way the scientist speaks. Possibly that's because he's not very mature and is smart beyond his years. Good night. Thank you very much. Next headline, Playmate, from a planet of communion. August 11, 2001. Tell me about yourself. How tall are you? At full maturity, about 2 feet. And you said you were wide. What does that mean, wide? We're not skinny. We like to eat. Sometimes we eat a little more than we need. What do you eat? Hard to describe in your culture, but we don't eat anything you would call an animal or, for that matter, a person. There's some funny stuff in your fictional literature about ETs coming to consume human beings. How silly. I've never heard of any ETs who do that. But what about fresh vegetables, grains, stuff like that? I can't describe it. It's nothing like what we have. Nothing like what you have, but it is taste specific. That means that you eat things on the basis of how they taste, rather than what they're supposed to do. So if you want something, say, for example, sweet, then you are presented with forms and shapes of sweet things. Maybe that's not so different from yours, but no one comes along to us and says, sit up straight and chew 26 times. You don't worry about vitamins and minerals and things like that. All of the food has that kind of thing in it, so we always get what we need, but we can choose. I'm picking the tastes you are familiar with, though there are others. For example, we could pick sweet or sour or salty or refreshing like a citrus thing, but it isn't chat. But do you actually grow them in the ground, or do you have hydroponics, or do you replicate them, or what? We don't grow any of it. I'm not sure where it comes from, that's not my job. Oh, it doesn't even come from your planet. I don't know. It might came from the planet, but, I'll explain why I don't know. Our culture doesn't travel, when we are born and raised. The place we are born and raised is the place we stay, unless we go somewhere like me, traveling about with my companions. This to page 150 on the ebook at Google Play, which is maybe, circa third of the whole book.